looking for more customers for your business? Are you facing new competitors? Not just across town, but across the country. How about across borders? How about worldwide? Welcome to Global Reach with your host, Tay Revez. As new technology makes it easier to connect with your customers, it also makes it easier for international competitors to reach them. Our program will help you stay competitive in a tough marketplace. Now, here's your host, Tay Revez.
Welcome back, everyone, to Global Reach, the show that helps you do business internationally. This week, the show is all about investment and business opportunities in some of Latin America's most vibrant sectors: renewable energy, education services, the swag market, and mobile payments. My guest is Nate Sapaya. He's managing director of Alternative Latin Investor, which is a fantastic publication. Since its launch in 2009, it's become a top source of information on alternative investment in Latin America. He's also a partner in Capricorn Research Group, focusing on consulting for strategic entry, fund establishment, capital introduction, public relations, and marketing. So welcome, Nate. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Tay. It's a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity.
So let's start out by just defining what are alternative asset classes and exactly what is alternative Latin investor?
Well, the definition of alternative asset classes is quite broad. I mean, most strictly said, it's anything that's not stock, cash, or bond. So anything outside that can be considered an alternative asset class. In some circles, you know, a Ferrari or a yacht can be considered an alternative asset class. But for the purview of our magazine, we basically look at hedge funds, private equity, renewable energy, commodities, Forex, art, wine, and infrastructure. Those are kind of our focus segments. The idea being that when we created the magazine in 2009 was that there was a lot of interest in Latin America, but it wasn't meshed with an increase in information on the region. So if you Google investment in Latin America, there was still a majority of, you know, scams on cheap property, beach property in Panama, or other things that were completely irrelevant to the investment market.
So you have 13 very different countries, different economies. Where do you see the most growth in Latin America?
Well, it's hard to say it is there's one place that's actually driving growth, there's the most growth, because there's different types of growth for each region. Obviously, what's gotten the most press has been Brazil, just because it's the powerhouse of the region. Nothing else is even close to Brazil. If you take hedge funds, for example, there's about 530 LATAM hedge funds within Latin America. About 470 are in Brazil. But that's not to say Brazil has the best growth. Peru and Colombia have significant growth figures looking at GDP. Colombia also has been, ex-presidente Uribe has been on the warpath globally, trying to change the PR of Colombia from the Escobar days. So it really depends on what you're looking for, where you want to go, and, you know, what kind of sector you're looking in. But Brazil, Peru, Colombia, Mexico are phenomenal when you're looking at growth.
Great. And now, going from the countries to the sectors, I mentioned sectors starting out, but which sectors do you see have the best potential for investment?
Again, it really did, I mean, when you ask, you know, if you talk to any investment advisor, which I'm not, but if you ask, you know, what should I invest in, it really depends on what the investor is looking for. Obviously, an institutional investor has a different set of requirements than a private investor. A hedge fund, different than private equity, so on and so forth. But sectors that I find very interesting are sectors that are in development. So renewable energy, the technological sector, healthcare, retail. I think education are huge sectors because they can all capitalize on the recent and rapid growth of the middle class in the region.
Are these, in general, are they primarily venture capitalist or private equity plays, or are there broader opportunities?
Again, it depends on where they are in the timeline of the sector. So private equity plays are for the more developed market in the expansion and knowledge transfer parts, whereas venture capital is more in the greenfield stages, research and development, say in agribusiness or agritechnology, there's more venture capital money. In tech, there's more venture capital because it's these startups and greenfields that need the money to get going, whereas private equity looks at more developed businesses.
Is there scope there for the independent investor, or do you really need to do that with a fund, you know, join in with a venture fund?
It depends how much money the individual investor has, but the best way to get access Two, the reason we'd create Alternative Latin Investor is that with stock markets being so nascent and small in these regions, the best way to get exposure to these regions and sectors is through alternative vehicles, be it a private equity fund, renewable energy fund, hedge fund. So really the best way we look at things is through the point of view of alternative asset classes. So we look at renewable energy from the point of view of a real estate investor, a private equity investor, a hedge fund investor. But there is opportunity for individual investors in Latin America, be it listed equities in Brazil, funds, commodity plays. There are significant amounts of vehicles that can give the individual investor exposure to the region.
On the other side, aside from what I would say portfolio investment, there are also, in these sectors, opportunities for foreign direct investment and for our listeners if they're trying to market goods and services in Latin America.
For sure. That is huge. When I mentioned expansion from private equity projects, what's happening is Latin America has been growing rapidly over the past 10 years, and they need these services. They need energy. They need retail outlets. They need technology. But they don't have the knowledge or they don't have the trained workforce locally to be able to supply that need. So service providers from outside, from the developed world or other emerging markets, can assist in meeting the demand of the rapidly growing middle class in Latin America. And that's where lots of value is found in these private equity deals.
Let's take these sectors one at a time. I'm particularly intrigued by the renewable energy sector because I had a guest who was a venture capitalist a couple weeks ago, and I asked him about renewables, and he felt there really weren't good opportunities, at least in the U.S., for profitable investment. So you said something that really intrigued me when we were getting ready to do this show. You said you thought some companies were actually skipping fossil fuels for renewables.
Well, the point being, so if you look at the developed world, you know, we've had a growing need for energy since the Industrial Revolution, where the most accessible energy was coal, then to oil, then to nuclear, so on and so forth. Whereas the demand for energy in Latin America has had a recent boom, where we currently have the technology to make wind farms, solar, biofuel. So really, it's not that there's so much skipping fossil fuels, it's just the best option right now isn't fossil fuels. I mean, why would you start drilling an oil well when you can put up a wind farm? The technology didn't exist for the developed world when we had the need, so now it's easy for these countries. For example, Brazil has 83% of their electric grid comes off of hydro, which is a phenomenal amount. And that's why renewable energy is growing so quickly in Latin America, is the technology is there now, and this is also when they're finding both local and foreign investment in these. There's money in the region, and they prefer to put it in renewables.
Although I do think at least one of your articles said that they were going to take the lead on deep water drilling.
That is also...
And could be the technology leader there.
It does. The pre-salt deep oil in Brazil was a huge discovery. Though kind of the industry experts think that it's still quite a while away. It's, you know, at least 5 to 10 years before there'll be any production on those barrels, which doesn't meet the energy need now.
So in terms of renewables, what are some of the really outstanding, exciting projects that are going on?
There's a few very exciting things. One of the things that I find very interesting is the debate between food source and energy source. This is something that Castro had a problem with in Cuba, is that he wouldn't make ethanol from sugarcane because it could be used for other things. So what they're developing in with a lot of partnerships globally with Brazil, Guatemala, is jatropha, is a kind of tropical tree which has oily seeds which you can make jatropha crude oil from. And the thing is, it's not edible and it grows in very horrible land conditions. So you can put it where you're not... There's no opportunity cost of lost commodities. So development in alternative biofuels is a phenomenal area for expansion, for investment, for development, in my opinion.
Okay. Now, we all know about the sugar cane. So how do you spell this tree? So just say it again for me.
Jatropha. J-A-T-R-O-P-H-A. There's also elephant grass and other non-feedstocks.
And what countries are these in?
Right now, there's a huge push for it in Brazil. There's a company called SG Biofuels out of California that's kind of pioneering this. There's a few other joint ventures. which are going on to develop the agri technology of planting this and turning it into Jatropha crude.
Huh. What about wind power?
Wind power is fairly expansive throughout Latin America. One of the problems you have in Argentina, for example, is Argentina, the Pampas of Patagonia are ripe for wind power. There's nothing you can do there. There's lots of wind. It's perfect. The problem is it doesn't make economic sense for investors to build them. Argentina has price controls on the energy, which makes the energy very, very cheap. So that means if you spend X amount of dollars to build a wind farm, you can't sell it for the amount of money that it takes to bring it back. Much of their electricity comes from natural gas they buy from Bolivia, despite the fact they have natural gas caches in Argentina. So the problem isn't really the technology of getting the energy, it's what you can get for it when you sell it.
Just moving away from renewables for a second, I understand that Argentina with the natural gas is now looking at hydrofracking, something that's incredibly controversial here. Is their natural gas somehow sequestered away from their water?
The hydrofracturing or fracking, as they're calling it, is a big debate in Argentina. One of the things that got a lot of press, but the thing is there's other natural wells of natural gas that don't need to be fracked that haven't been found yet. And as I said, they import lots of their natural gas from Bolivia. The energy market in Argentina is quite difficult. And again, with price controls, fracking is quite expensive. And I can't say this for certain, but I don't believe that, you know, best practices could be bypassed when fracking in Argentina.
Okay. We've got about 30 seconds. Anything really exciting going on in solar? And we can pick this up right after the break.
The one thing that's great about solar is, one, it used to be expensive, and now the price of the technology has gone down. And two, is it's non-invasive because you can mount solar panels to roofs. So you don't need to have a wind farm in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of a city. Every urban building can have a solar panel on the roof, which is completely non-invasive and provides energy to the grid.
So you know, we got to go to break now. When we come back, I want to pick up on solar. And I also heard that Mexico is going geothermal. So don't go away. When we come back, we're going to continue on renewables. And then we're going to go on to some of the other really vibrant sectors in these wonderful economy.
Perfect.
Come back soon.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616. Are you a business innovator or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm here with Nate Sapaya, the editor of Alternative Latin Investor, and we do have a caller. Not coincidentally, this is my first guest, John Price, who is the head of America's Market Intelligence, and he's calling all the way from Italy, so I'm going to let you go right ahead.
Thanks, Tay.
Welcome back, John.
Great show. Nate, my question's sort of broad in scope. I was wondering if you could explain a little bit about some of the risks that investors face when investing in renewable energy in South America.
Well, thanks, John. Basically, the risks that you find with renewable energy, first off, are the same risks you have with pretty much any Latin American investment, and that's kind of political risk. As we saw with the YPF Repsol in Argentina, it just got nationalized. That's a huge risk when investing in renewable projects, and usually that's the first thing you want to check off your list when doing your due diligence, is what is the political risk of where you're investing. Secondary to that is, you know, change in energy prices. Brazil holds auctions for energy, same in Chile, Argentina. So, you know, dip in energy prices can hurt renewable energy and what people are paying for a tender. So really political risk and the price of energy are the top things to deal with when looking at risk in renewable energies.
Okay. If there's time for a follow-up question,
I'm wondering, John,
if any of the governments provide support, sort of pricing support to at least mitigate the risk of changing energy prices, conventional energy prices?
This is an excellent question. And not so much on the prices, but on the political risk, what's happened and which has increased investment in renewable energy and infrastructure development in Latin America has been the emergence of what they call PPP deals, which are public-private partnerships, which puts you in league with the government, which takes a lot of the political risk out of the equation. With these, like most investors or funds or institutions won't even look at your deal unless you have a PPP in place. So that takes a lot of the risk out of the equation. In terms of pricing, it's set by the markets to some degree. But there are, on the other side, incentives from the government for being renewable, which help balance out some of the energy pricing risk.
Is that from most of the governments, or
Brazil and Chile are the front runners for that, giving subsidies for renewable energy? There are some in Mexico as well, but then those are the main places you would be investing in renewable energy.
So, given that you're saying the risk is at least controlled, if not minimal, what are some of the opportunities on the investment side for our listeners? How can they get involved in the renewable sector in Latin America?
In the renewable sector. So as we discussed previous to the break, there are in looking at agri-technology for new feed sources for renewable energy as the Dutrofa or elephant grass. Also in wind, solar, and ethanol is very large in Brazil. Ethanol production Brazil is the main producer. So looking at either listed stocks on the Brazilian Bovespa, funds which participate in the industry, or depending on the amount of money you're looking to invest, in direct deals. But obviously, you know, we would advise that anyone who's looking at direct investment in the country has obviously a local partner, which is crucial to doing any business in any market, developing or developed, which is not your own.
Very true. John, are you still there? No. I think he's gone offline. So can you name, you mentioned funds and stocks without trying to promote anybody. Are there any specific ones that you've written about that our listeners might want to look at?
There's a fund called Real Infra, which is phenomenal. FE Renewables, also an excellent fund. Both of those are run by people in the business and on the ground, which is to say they're not global macro funds run out of London or New York, but people actually in Brazil, Argentina, Chile doing this work. They are the two front runners, which I would recommend.
Now, what about opportunities for our listeners who are selling goods and services? What opportunities would you see for them in the renewable sector?
For goods and services in the renewable, it really depends what goods and services they're actually selling. But on the, for example, when you put up a wind farm in these places that has a demand for energy, and they, you know, this renewable energy is supplying that demand, there is a lack of skilled workforce to deal with the project once it's been produced. So fixing things, repair parts, connecting to the grid, marketing, all the kind of things that have happened in the developed world for the past 20 years since we've had renewables are skills and workforce that aren't existent in Latin America. So that there's a huge need for secondary services post-completion of these renewable projects.
Out of curiosity, you mentioned solar earlier. Where do the companies that are doing solar tend to source their solar panels from? Is it all coming out of China? Are they sourcing Europe and the U.S. as well? Do you know?
Europe and the U.S. are the main places for sourcing for both wind and solar. Obviously, Denmark is huge in the wind farm production. This is one of the things that also makes investing in renewable energy in Latin America very exciting, is that you don't deal with any of the R&D costs. All this is technology transfer from the developed world. So the technology has been there, it's been tested, people know how it works, and you can buy it and bring it to Latin America, and none of that overhead is put onto the investor or the people doing these deals in Latin America.
Do you see, with such a vibrant energy sector, do you see, and in some cases fairly low energy costs, do you see knock-on effects that are helping other industries in Latin America, the manufacturing sectors? Are they profiting by this? And again, are there opportunities for our listeners?
The tie-ins between renewable and other sectors are minimal at this stage, just because of the nascent nature of the industry. I mean, renewables in Latin America have been, you know, 10 years maximum, 20 years, but I mean, they're still really young. So the crossover effects have been minimal.
Okay. Let's turn to another sector. I know that you're just about to be issue. It's got a focus on education. I don't normally think of education either as something to invest in or, well, more so we think of it as something with some of our listeners are exporting educational services. But talk to me about the education sector as an investment. What's going on there?
We had the exact same thought when we decided to do an issue on education investment, because when you think of investing in education, it means paying for your kids' college, which is basically investing in education. But as a return, as an investment vehicle, or as a sector to look at, we thought was quite interesting. And this all still revolves around feeding a need in Latin America. They need more seats in colleges, in high schools, in middle schools, in grade schools, and preschools. They don't know how to expand. They don't have the money to expand, but they know they have this future need that needs to be met. We need X amount of workers in 2020 to meet the need of people buying houses now, buying cars now, doing more business now. So that's where the education investment component comes in, is that it's not a lot of greenfield development, but expansion and education to the educators. How do you run a school of 1,000 people as opposed to a school of 100 people? How do you have viral classes? How do you have language labs, internet labs? How do you expand and put these education institutions on the same plane on an international level? It's where you find value when investing in education.
Who's providing that kind of service?
Lots of private equity funds are getting into it. They're bringing knowledge who've invested in Latin America in U.S. educational institutions. Lots of the big players down there, like Colliers, Pearson's, McGraw-Hill, they've all got their fingers in something in Latin America. E-learning is also huge because you don't need any physical infrastructure. You just need an internet connection, and you can get knowledge to wherever a person with a computer is.
There's a lot of that going on in China, where they want to give their high school students an advantage in getting into universities. and they're both getting local services, but they're also giving them international education.
The international schools are huge in Latin America. One of the reasons is both the growth in disposable income of regional families and the influx of foreign families to be working in the region. And when you look at international schools, on a basic level, reading, writing, arithmetic are all somewhat similar. When people have more disposable income, they obviously want their children to go to better schools, and what that means is more extended programs beyond the core curriculum. So arts, sports, music, technology, the things that will really give people or students an edge in the future are what are being added to the curriculum now.
All the things we're cutting out of public education in the U.S.
Exactly.
You mentioned the big names that are in there. Is there a place for smaller companies and small entrepreneurs?
There is, but you have to find a very specific niche. I mean, like McGraw-Hill, Pearson's, like, even in the U.S., the textbook industry is, you know, somewhat of a monopoly or an oligarchy. There's not much room for the independent player. However, with technology taking a big part in education, with, you know, applications and online learning and programs and sites that teach you to learn differently, you know, Lumosity is one of those that's gone viral across the world for making people smarter. That's where the opportunity is. When you come up with a new way to learn or a new way to provide services, information, that's where your niche can be and where you can find profit. If you're just going to make another textbook, you don't really have a chance.
We've got about a minute to break. This is going really fast. But what kind of numbers are we talking about? What's the size of the market for the various educational services?
In terms of size, because when you talk to lots of these private equity guys that are in Brazil, in Mexico, in Chile, they say that they don't see an end to the amount of projects they can do in the near future, just because there's no end to the amount of population or people that you can educate. I mean, if you look at, you know, outside Sao Paulo and Rio, there's most of Brazil lives in rural areas. So you can, there really is no limit to how much you can expand or how much you can do. It's just based on what the need is, which is incredible, with 20% of the Brazilian population jumping tax brackets each year.
Because we do have to go to break. Just yes or no, is the internet infrastructure there to support e-learning, to extending through the rural areas in Latin America?
It is.
Okay. Listen, everybody, thank you very much for listening. We're going to go to break now. When we come back, we're going to talk about the swag market and take a look a little bit at technology. Don't go away.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Today's workplace is filled with complex challenges. The equal opportunity landscape is ever-changing. To stay up to date, tune in to The Proactive Employer with Stephanie R. Thomas. The Proactive Employer brings you the practical suggestions you need to get and stay compliant. Join us every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Global Reach, everyone. I'm here with my guest, Nate Sapaya from Alternative Latin Investor, and we're about to talk about the swag market. Now, if we were in Australia, that would refer to the loot from a robbery. But in this case, we're talking about silver. What's the W?
Silver, wine, art, and gold.
And gold. Tell me about this. How is Latin American art as an asset class? Is there really a lot of global interest?
Actually, Tay, that is the reason that values have gone up, is this perpetuating expansion of interest in Latin American art. Now over 50% of art that's Latin American is bought by non-Latin Americans, which was not the case previously, and in which case it got less exposure on the global market, valuations were down, prices were down. But now that it's gotten to the main stage, both Christie's and Sotheby's has two auctions annually that are solely Latin American art, and prices have gone through the roof. In the 90s, you could get a Frida Kahlo for in the tens of thousands. Now they're going for millions.
So who's buying it? Is it coming out of Asia, out of North America, Middle East?
There's a lot of U.S. and European interest in Latin American art because of cultural similarities, time zone, and you know, familiarity with the region. There is Asian when you look at the Asian development in art buying, it's also, again, due to the more disposable income coming out of China. But then again, in Asia, they look more to Asian art. In Asia, there's a fascination with brand names and recognition. So lots of Asian purchases goes to known names, which are the classics and the very high-value pieces of art.
Aside from Frida Kahlo, and I'm sure that the film Frida gave her paintings a boost, who else are some of the major Latin American artists today?
Botero is huge. He's had a resurgence. There's a lot of interest recently ever since Banksy out of London with the urban art. There's a huge Brazilian urban art scene, especially out of Sao Paulo, which was literally on fire.
Now, what about emerging artists who might be more affordable to some of our listeners?
Again, that goes down to, no one wants to miss the next Van Gogh, which is, you know, what the art critics say or art dealers. So, I mean, there is a lot of emerging art coming out of the region. Argentina is one of the most, you know, creative places on the planet with a lot of art coming out of Buenos Aires. There's some phenomenal Cuban art, which is starting to get a lot of press. Also, as I said, urban Brazilian is very large.
Okay, any other particular countries that have great art?
You know,
like
Mexico,
there are some tribes
Mexico.
In Africa that are particularly fabulous stuff. I collect a couple of pieces. So are there particular countries that are emerging that we should be looking at?
I would say Cuban art is on my hot list of places to look, which doesn't have an established track record, where you can still find artists that are somewhat underground, which are somewhat unknown, with phenomenal talents, but, you know, will have value in the future. And especially as Cuba becomes, as I assume it will come, you know, there'll be more freedoms in Cuba over the next decade. That'll really put value on artists that we're working now when they're still, you know, as we say, you know, semi-oppressed.
So if our listeners want to invest in Latin American art, you mentioned the big houses, but what about some of this underground art? How would they best find it?
We work with ArtVest, which is a company out of New York that advises art investment. There's an entire website dedicated to art called LATAM Arts. This is through the best ways to do it. And also, like there's Latin American dedicated art museums in quite a few major cities in the United States. The Latin American Museum of Art in Los Angeles, in New York, in Dallas is phenomenal. Also, the Armory Show in New York every spring has a special LATAM segment, and the last Armory Show was majority dedicated to Latin American art.
Now, I saw a really intriguing article in Alley.
Mm-hmm.
Alternative Latin Investor. Alternative Latin Investor. I shouldn't be just doing initials, but on the importance of investing in small technology-based companies in Peru. Just real quickly, why Peru and why this sector?
Well, first of all, what happened in Peru was a program is sponsored by Nest, and Peru was just
what is Nest?
They can work anywhere.
What is Nest?
Nest is a Chilean philanthropic organization run majorly by private equity guys. And Peru has phenomenal numbers. They had incredible GDP growth. Everyone thought Humala, the latest elected president, was going to go the way of Chavez, but he's actually much more conservative and just looking out for the good of his people. So it was a way to empower local communities through technology, which I really think has applications throughout Latin America and really throughout any developing market.
I'm sure that's the hottest space for the venture capitalists and the private equity people.
For sure.
But speaking of technology, you mentioned something I thought was particularly striking. You said that hackathons are a great venue to find technology and talent. Now, first of all, what exactly are hackathons and who stages them?
Well, basically, they're put on by usually by a sponsor, you know, a large technological corporation, and basically it's kind of like the Olympics for the technological set, where you can show your talents, what you can do, why you can do it, how you can do it better than someone else.
This isn't literally bringing together hackers.
No, it's anyone who works in the technology sector. Some of them might be hackers. I'm sure they don't announce that on their CVs. But it's basically a way to bring together technologically minded people for one event or want to showcase their talents, really. And this is where tech investors go to find the best talent in the region.
So where is the next one going to be held?
I can't say exactly. There was one in Sao Paulo a little bit ago. They're starting to kind of merge with these kind of business incubators. There's one called Palermo Valley in Argentina. They're kind of trying to recreate. What they're trying to do is recreate Silicon Valley in Latin America. There's an excellent program in Santiago in Chile called Startup Chile, and what it does is trying to forcibly jumpstart an entrepreneurial environment. In a place where if you go to Silicon Valley, everyone there, the majority of people are entrepreneurs. They're willing to help you with your projects. They have inside knowledge with projects. They know where to get funding, how to exit, so on and so forth, which is not a community that exists in Latin America. So what the Chilean government has done is they are inviting 300-something teams a year to Chile. They'll give you a visa for 6 months. They'll give you $50,000 in terms of that you can expense, and they'll pay you back. And you'll be in Chile to create your project, work with other entrepreneurs, the idea being that, you know, graduates of the program, or not graduates, but alumni of the program, will stay in Chile, help other entrepreneurs, and really forcibly create an entrepreneurial community within the city.
That's really interesting. Do you write a lot about that in your magazine?
We have covered it twice. We think it's a phenomenal program because it gets both, because not only does it give money to local developments and projects, but it brings foreign projects in. And so it brings new blood into the country with different ideas, different cultural values and ways of doing things, and, you know, different points of view that are really going to make Santiago huge in the entrepreneurial space.
Wow. Now, another area that's really booming all over the world is mobile commerce and mobile payments. Big deal, and it's even been, mobile payments have even been transforming a number of markets. We've talked about Kenya on this show a lot. You mentioned that there's a lot of interest in the region, but also some structural blocks. But you've also said you think Latin America is poised for a mobile payments boom. Can you talk about it?
Yes. Well, an example I like to give is I was on an island off the coast of Panama called Bocas del Toro. Beautiful island in the Caribbean. I highly recommend it. But I was able to pay for my hotel room with PayPal, but not a credit card, because they had internet, but not a hard phone line. So they couldn't take my credit card, but I could PayPal away. That's something that happens to a lot of places in Latin America, is either they don't have the infrastructure, they don't have bank accounts, they're afraid of banks from prior experiences or military problems. And so mobile payments could really empower people in giving them some financial freedom. So there's a few firms working on the proprietary technology to do mobile phone transfers, mobile phone to point of sale transfers, to ATMs, to web. So it really gives the individuals within Latin America the purchasing power of the rest of the world without the necessity to have a bank account, a checking account, and a credit card, which most people don't have. I believe credit card penetration in Latin America is 16%, whereas cell phone penetration is almost 100.
Actually, John could probably tell us what the credit card penetration is in Latin America. I know we did a project on it.
Okay.
But this sounds like it would also be a market then for prepaid cards.
That is actually that's the number way, one way of doing it right now, is you prepay money and put it on your card. So you buy a $10 credit and you have $10 of money on your phone, which you can use to buy whatever you want.
And I'm thinking it also might be a good market for technologies like Square, which lets you plug something into your cell phone and do the payments.
Exactly. That's really interesting. If you look at lots of one of the great things about Latin America is while they do have parts of the developed world, the supermarkets and the malls, lots of things, you know, on the commodity side or on the food side are still, you know, local markets, local stores, individual business owners who could benefit by being able to receive money from more people, have an easier accounting system in which, you know, they can directly see how much money came in for whatever they sold this day. I think the applications for this in both urban and rural areas of Latin America are phenomenal, both for investors and people on the sell side of the technology and the end users.
Hmm. Is there also a large commuting population? And by that I mean people who work in the city and send money back home to rural areas.
There is some of that. I mean, obviously not as much as you'd see in the U.S., but there is some of that who work in the region of Latin America. But lots of people within Latin America are very secular in nature and like to stay close to home. Obviously, they like staying with family. So moving family towards the city together, or, you know, staying in the city in which they were born.
Well, that's interesting. It's a little different. When we looked at Kenya, had a lot of people who were working in Nairobi but sending money back to tribal regions. And with M-Pesa, which is the payment system there, they actually saw crime rates go down because they weren't actually taking cash with them when they went home.
Really?
Okay. So, really, yeah. So it's a major change on the society. So what are some of the opportunities for our listeners, either on the investment side or on the business side, that they might look at here?
On the investment side, the opportunities available are in technological developments, on a better system of using, of understanding what they have, what they need, and what they can and can't do. That is to say, they have a phone, they don't have a bank account, they want to buy stuff off the internet or at an ATM or at Starbucks, and they can't. So creating a system for that would be an incredible investment, or investing in people who are developing that technology. Forward from that, lots of the exposure is going to be on the institutional level, because it'll be between the big players that we have no contact with. It'll be between American Express and Carlos Slim, the richest man in the world who owns most of the telecommunications south of Texas. So there's
all right,
not a lot of wiggle room when you get to the institutional side.
Okay. We got to go to break now. When we come back, we're going to talk about political risk, nationalization, how the EU debt crisis might affect Latin America, and a little bit about the China-Latin American connection, or Asian-Latin American connection. So don't go away. We'll be back for our last segment in 3 minutes.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
Is your business ready to get started in social media? If you've already made that plunge, where do you stand right now? Are you using it to stay ahead of your competition? Or are you feeling a bit lost? Tune in to Social Media Pearls with host Shirley Williams. Shirley and her guest experts are here to answer your questions as well as focus on areas where you should have questions. It's everything you've always wanted to know about using social media for business. It's Social Media Pearls, live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm here with my guest, Nate Sapaya of Alternative Latin Investor. Now we're going to talk about political risk. We touched on it when we were talking about renewables, but there's been a spate of nationalizations in Venezuela and Argentina. I kind of thought we were mostly done with that, but it's reared its ugly head again. How is that affecting investment in Latin America? Are any of the private equity people, VCs, or foreign direct investors shying away?
Well, I mean, it's building on a framework of that's already established some level of distrust. Investors were very scared away from Argentina after the crisis of 2001, which basically shut down the economy. The Argentina had a dollar to peso peg, which was lifted, and everything kind of hit the fan. So investors were just trying to regain their confidence in Argentina. Now that nationalization hit, there is no institution that is willing to come into Argentina for the most part. That's not to say there aren't opportunities for the individual investor. It's important to look at the difference between political risk and real asset risk when looking at a country. So politically very risky, but certain assets still hold value and can be looked at. For example, real estate. Vineyard property is amazingly inexpensive and an amazing investment within Argentina, which is not so correlated with political risk. However, if you look at the energy sector, as the Spanish found, or other sectors, you don't want anything to do with Argentina. Venezuela is basically a minefield. When I was working in Panama, the Panamanians loved Venezuela because all the talented and rich people from Venezuela moved to Panama because of Chavez.
You know, when I was back at Business International, they used to say, and this is 30 years ago, they used to say Argentina was the almost country. It had all the resources, all the talent, and it would just about get there, and then get a political snag.
In 1921, Argentina had the seventh largest economy in the world. If you look at there's the Heritage Foundation does an index of economic freedom, which rates things on contracts, businesses, how easy it is to do business in the country. Argentina this year was 157 below Kazakhstan and Burkina Faso.
Are there any other countries where we have an appropriation risk? Peru, Chile? I know they're resource rich.
There was debate, and there was a lot of heat on Peru before the Humala was elected, which died off post election, but is now starting to come back when people have realized that he's quite moderate in his leftist views. There is always some risk, but what most countries outside Argentina and Venezuela do is look at kind of like the John Nash prisoner's dilemma. They look at what's good for themselves and their opponents being the foreign market. Whereas Argentina and Venezuela just look internally. Cristina Kirchner's administration has nothing in place to deal, accept, or encourage foreign investment, where Chile, Peru, Argentina, Colombia are vehement about that they need foreign investment to jumpstart their economies, to get their economies to the developed stage, to move from simply commodity producers to end product producers.
Let me ask you, there are a lot of young democracies in Latin America that's still a little fragile. Are there any other lurking political risks that, you know, potential political risks
that investors or
companies doing business in Latin America should just have their antenna out for?
There's always the possibility of political risk. You know, as we've seen developments in the Middle East, like things went viral real quick. Yeah. Luckily for the better, but there's always that risk that something can happen. There can be an uprising. There can be a new Che Guevara that pops up from somewhere and, you know, throws a wrench in the works of things. There's nothing really on the horizon that we're looking out for. I mean, basically, we're just waiting for these guys to get out. We're waiting for Castro and Chavez to die and for Cristina to be out of office. But there's no one really on the horizon that we're worried about that we're keeping our eyes on.
Okay, and no new movements or anything?
Nope, there's not really, no.
What about, I mean, Europe is still a significant market for Latin America, and they have old ties. But Europe is in a lot of trouble now.
Very
How
true.
Is the debt crisis impacting Latin America, particularly now you have Spain on life support? What are you seeing the impact of the European debt crisis on Latin American markets?
Well, there's a few various angles you can look at this. One, if you look at hedge funds, for example, lots of institutions in the U.S. and U.S. investors have a certain paradigm they look at when investing in hedge funds. You need a certain amount of track record. You need a certain scale or size of your fund, which is high. You know, we want a fund that has a 10-year or 5-year track record and over $250 million in assets. Whereas Europeans were more accepting to smaller, newer funds. They were a little less risk averse. So that inflow of capital is now gone temporarily. Also, you look at the kind of flight to quality. Whenever things go wrong economically, people usually trend towards the dollar, to gold. But things have been changing so rapidly in Europe. I mean, the Swiss devalued the franc by about 10% to stave off the inflation risk. So that's going to affect Latin America on a secondary level. Also, you see money not going to Europe is being diverted elsewhere. No matter what happens in the world, there's still capital, still rich people, still institutions that need to put their money to work that are losing money if they just have it liquid in cash due to inflation.
Let me
shift geography. Money coming from Asia into Brazil is affecting the Brazilian real because that money is not going to Europe anymore. Or money that might have been destined for Europe previously is now flooding to other regions, changing the interaction of currencies.
Let me shift regions on you now. We've just got about 3 minutes left to the show. You talked about Asia establishing a lot of new connections with Latin America. Give us a couple of quick highlights.
Asia, I mean, looking going forward, I think there's going to be much, much more emerging market on emerging market investment, basically cutting out the first or developed world. So China last year overtook the U.S. as the largest investor into Brazil. They're trying to buy up everything. We're trying to bring in Middle Eastern investment into Latin America. I worked with a private equity fund out of Sao Paulo who did a 2-week roadshow in the U.S. and they raised about $10 million. They were in Seoul, Korea for about 3 days. They raised $400 million.
Wow.
There's a lot of capital there that's been sitting. And because of the closed or somewhat closed nature of lots of Asian societies and business, there's been money just sitting there that's been being reinvested in Asia that now needs a place to go. And with the fall of the kind of U.S. and Europe, that place to go is logically Latin America, as Africa's not ready. I mean, but there's still a lot of mineral and base commodity investment in Africa. But Latin America is the place to go when you have money. And right now the people who have money are Asia.
Now, that should be one of the most important takeaways for our listeners. In 60 seconds, what are the two other most important takeaways that our listeners should get from this show?
I would just highly opening your eyes or your opinions to Latin America. Latin America has a lot of stereotypes which are hard to overcome. If it's Pele or Chavez or Castro or whatever, there's a lot of stereotypes about Latin America that stop people from investing in the region. But, you know, it's a phenomenal place to invest, and they've really learned from the mistakes of the past of the developed world and the developing world. For example, in Argentina, post-October 2008, when we hit our crisis in the U.S., they said, ¿qué crisis? That is to say, what crisis? Because it was not nearly as bad as what happened in Argentina in 2001.
So that's a great point.
Brazil had the crisis, tequila crisis in Mexico, crash in Argentina, the Escobar debacle in Colombia. They've been taught some lessons that we haven't learned since 1929. So they've been kind of put through the ringer much more strenuously than we have. So their financial systems, their economic models, while not as developed as ours, have been tested a little harder. They've learned more mistakes, and going forward will be much more stable than people assume.
Nate, very quick, because we're going to have to close now, what's your website?
The website is alternativelatininvestor.com. We're a bi-monthly publication that comes out in both print and digital formats. We cover all alternative asset classes within Latin America, and we'll be expanding to cover our coverage of Asia and Africa and the connection between those emerging markets in late September.
Thank you so much, Nate. Really appreciate your being on the show. I think it was a lively and valuable session.
Thank you for having me, Tay.
And everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in this week. Next week, we're going to take a look at environmental law, international, and send us your questions, send us your comments. We're at trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Please use the week to extend your global reach, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Global Reach with Tay Revez. Please join us again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.